get ready.
Hello, I think.
Welcome to the Galactic Escape Pod.
Incoming!
Well, come on.
Nice of you guys to drop by.
The official podcast of Galactic-Voyage.com.
Everybody quiet. We've been waiting for you.
Everything is proceeding as I have foreseen.
Impressive. Most impressive.
Welcome back, everybody, to the next episode of the Galactic Escape Pod. We're so glad to have you with us again today, and we have another great show in store for you today. Let's talk a little bit about some of the news topics we're going to be hitting before we get into our interview today. First, we wanted to say, could Ian McDiarmid be returning to Star Wars? Also, we'll talk a little bit about Mark Hamill as he talks about Episode 7. J.J. Abrams says it's too early for Star Wars talk. And then we'll also get into some discussion about the Clone Wars Episode 19, To Catch a Jedi. And also we'll be bringing you the Mark Newbold interview. This is going to be part two of that interview. And then lastly today we'll be talking and bringing you the story of Star Wars, which will be our part five of that series. So just remember that this episode is going to be a little bit longer because of the interview with Mark. And we appreciate you all enjoying these episodes, and we'll get right into the news.
You know what's going on? Maybe it's another drill.
What if he doesn't survive? He's worth a lot to me.
Alright, move along.
So as we get started with the news today, could Ian McDiarmid return to Star Wars? First, we have unconfirmed rumors of Harrison Ford mulling over a return to the GFFA for Episode 7, then Jeremy Bullock, and now Ian McDiarmid makes clear his willingness to come back as the long-since-deceased Emperor Palpatine. He says, quote, "He's disappeared into oblivion, and I don't know what the plans are for Star Wars. They are talking about a lot of projects. The Emperor was the most evil character that ever lived, and now he's dead, but I suppose anything can happen in Star Wars." So, Ian McDiarmid is definitely interested in coming back, and will it be in Episode 7? I don't know that it would be there, and I certainly actually hope not coming into Episode 7, but with one of the spin-off movies that they've discussed, there are certain possibilities that Ian McDiarmid certainly could return as the Emperor in something prior to his death in Episode 6. So we'll keep an eye out for that one. As we continue with those who might be interested in talking about Episode 7 or in the Star Wars spin-off films, Entertainment Tonight spoke with Mark Hamill about his new movie Sushi Girl as it hits DVD and Blu-ray this week. And while talking about the project, the Star Wars legend was more than happy to provide ET Online with an update on his involvement with the in-development Star Wars Episode 7 and what he thinks of those planned spin-off movies. First off, will he appear in Star Wars Episode 7? He says, quote, "They're talking to us," he reveals. "George Lucas wanted to know whether or not we'd be interested. He did say that if we didn't want to do it, they wouldn't cast another actor in our parts. They would write us out. I can tell you right away that we haven't signed any contracts. We're in the stage where they want us to know and go in and meet with Michael Arndt, who's the writer, and Kathleen Kennedy, who's going to run Lucasfilm. And both have had meetings. They have been postponed at this point. On their end, not mine. And they're more busy than I am," end quote. So, again, he's definitely interested in working with Episode 7, and I know that they just haven't had an opportunity to get with him at this point, so I'm sure that as time frees up for them and they can all get together, I'm sure some sort of deal will be arranged, and in the future we will hear a little bit more about Mark Hamill as it comes to Star Wars Episode 7. So J.J. Abrams says it's too early for Star Wars talk. As you'll know, J.J. Abrams is hard at work currently on the hotly anticipated Star Trek Into Darkness. He made it clear that while on Star Trek duty, thoughts about Episode 7 will have to be put on hold. He says, quote, "It's too early to even talk about it. We're very excited. The thing we're working on is finishing the Star Trek Into Darkness movie, which comes out in May. It's a little like being in the middle of lunch and trying to think about what's for dinner. We're in the middle of Star Trek, so to think about Star Wars and the release date, all of that's far less of a concern than making a movie that's worth your time," end quote. So, again, I'm sure that we will get through the premiere of Star Trek Into Darkness, and as the dust starts to settle for that, then more comments and commentary and news and information and his thoughts about Star Wars Episode 7 will start to come more to light. So until then, I would be not looking for any real information until probably the middle of May from J.J. Abrams. So we've had another great episode of the Clone Wars as we go through episode 19 called To Catch a Jedi. This is the second to last episode for season 5, and it is the third part of a four-part story arc as we have been focusing on Ahsoka Tano as she's been kind of on the run for being framed for a murder that she didn't commit. As we discussed in the last podcast, we definitely got into the areas of, or it looked like we're getting into the areas as she dropped off into the hole of the video game 1313. And one of the cool things about this episode is she actually was on levels 1312 and 1315. So as we move forward, let's go ahead and play a clip of this particular episode.
See? Didn't kill one. It's the new me.
General Plo Koon, we had Commander Tano, but she escaped with the help of Asajj Ventress.
There it is. That's where you're supposed to find this clue. I've done my part of the bargain, which means you're on your own from here. But don't forget, you have to speak on my behalf now. That was the deal.
Agreed. Thanks for getting me this far, at least. I have to admit, I never saw us doing anything together. Ever.
These are strange times.
So as we thought from the trailers for this particular episode and some of the trailers that have been throughout the season, the masked character was indeed Asajj Ventress, as expected. Now, the mystery Jedi has to be Bare Asofi. They've hinted at this since the first episode of this story arc. And though as many have thought that we will see the demise of Ahsoka at the end of this arc, I don't really think that that's going to happen. To me, it would be much more interesting of a story if we could see in the next episode Asajj Ventress coming to Ahsoka's rescue and they go off together. That would definitely set you up for Season 6 and set up some drama for that. So again, if you haven't caught this episode, I recommend this one. Every episode is definitely getting better, and we're going to be definitely looking forward to the cliffhanger, which is our finale for Season 5, Episode 20, as we move forward. So we'll come back with some commentary and thoughts on that next week in our next episode. So today, our special guest will be, again, Mark Newbold, as we continue with part two of this interview with Mark. So let's go on and head over to the briefing room and get started.
Upper bay door. 5-3, upper bay door. 5-3, upper bay door.
Welcome back, everybody, to our briefing room in the Galactic Escape Pod, whereas today we're going to continue on with the second part of our interview with Mark Newbold. And as you heard before in our previous podcast, we were talking about kind of where he came from, where I came from, the origins of lightsaber and the origins of Galactic Voyage, and how we've moved forward through the years with toys and collecting and being interested in Star Wars. And now, one of the last things we talked about in the last podcast was, as we are starting to enter this new golden age of Star Wars, we want to talk a little bit about the new stuff that's really coming out on the horizon that everybody's very excited about. And we're just really honored to have back with us again, Mark Newbold from Jedi News. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Hello, Ing and Gary. How are you? You all right?
Doing great. So let's jump right in. Let's talk a little bit about these new films. I mean, this is what we've all been chomping at the bit for years and didn't even know that it was going to be coming. You know, we've lived through the area of time where we've had the Star Wars films, and then we had the dark times, as many people call it, the time when we didn't have anything going on Star Wars. And then, of course, we started getting the figures again and started getting into new books and fan fiction and all kinds of different information that came out for us. So we started just really eating those things up. Of course, as you mentioned in our last segment, we were kind of in the Clone Wars era, as you described it, and it's really been great to have the Clone Wars on TV. It's been fantastic, and I would love to continue to see that, even though we think that maybe next year might be the last year for that. But as we continue to now move in, we're going into new Star Wars territory. So tell me, Mark, describe your feelings a little bit about the reaction to finding out that there was going to be new Star Wars movies on the big screen. How did you feel about that?
Wow. I found out, it broke in the UK about 8 o'clock on the 30th of October, I think, and I was working away, so I was all ready to go to bed at 9 o'clock and have an early night because I had to be up at 3 in the morning for a long drive down south. And I got a phone call from James, my co-owner at Jedi News, and he says, have you heard the news? So what news? He says, Lucasfilm's just been sold to Disney and they're making 7, 8 and 9. So stunned silence on my end of the line because, we'd been talking to friends, the thought of Lucasfilm being sold to Disney had kind of come up in conversations around people. No concrete proof or evidence or anything. It just seemed like a logical place for it to go if ever it went anywhere. So that, whilst it was a surprise to actually hear it confirmed, it wasn't a surprise. It wasn't like they said, oh, we sold Star Wars to Walmart. It was something that made some kind of sense. But 7, 8, 9 again, we posted on Jedi News on April the 1st. Our Jedi News little April Fool's thing was, they're making 7, 8, 9, because we had actually heard some whisper, unconfirmed, might have been nothing other than just a whisper, back in the February, that they were going to do 7, 8, and 9. So we thought, oh, well, let's put it on as an April Fool. And if it turns out to be true, we can be very smug next year. And if it turns out to be false, we can go, oh, well, it was an April Fool's joke. So that's. I'm looking forward to April the 1st this year because we're going to look quite we're going to look quite good. But I was blown away in the best sense because I think we all kind of. And I remember when Jedi came out, and it was a case of, well, that's it. That's no more Star Wars, And then we waited all those 16 years, and then you get to sort of 96, 97, the special editions, and then they announced that they are doing the prequels, and it was just. Oh, it was just crazy, excitement. And I mean, I came over to the States for the premiere, well, not the actual premiere, but to see each of the prequels on the opening day in Vegas, funny enough, which is where me and my wife are going next month for a holiday. But we were I was very lucky with my friend Paul, who I mentioned in the last episode, to get over and see those. So to know that we've got all this coming again, it was just like, oh, wow. And being in the position, like you are with Galactic Voyage, to be able to report and talk to people about it, back when they announced the prequels, I think, we would have just barely been, well, you weren't online, I was doing stuff that probably got 300 hits a week, if I was lucky, and most of the hits were from me hitting refresh, you were very isolated, whereas now, news breaks now, and we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Skype, we're talking about it straight away, it's up on the site within 20 minutes, and everybody knows, nothing's a secret for very long these days, which is a totally different feel to how it used to be, and equally as exciting and just as much fun. I'm thrilled to bits, and I don't know where they're going to go with it. I've got thoughts, I'm sure we'll talk about
that. Yeah, we'll talk about that, sure.
yeah, you know, but Who knows? Is it going to be 20 years ahead? Is it going to be 30? Is it going to be 50?
And you know, one of the things that probably blew my mind more than anything about the fact that this was coming out were the folks that automatically said that they were disappointed in the whole idea of it, and that they were like thinking, well, this is it, it's dead, rest in peace, Star Wars, on October, what was it, the first that information came out, but
yeah.
it was just amazing to me how many people were negative, and that's something that through the years, and I don't know if it's just because we hear more about things through the online community, but how many folks were negative, and you know, from my point of view, if there's anything Star Wars, I don't care if it's droids, Ewoks, you know, the old cartoons like that, or if we're seeing things like Star Wars Detours that'll be coming out, and the Clone Wars, I don't care what it is. As long as it's Star Wars, I'm interested in seeing what it is, and I'm going to enjoy it. Now, there might be times that there are things that I would rather see differently, but it's not my show to say that. I am just happy the fact that there is something Star Wars. And I think a lot of that does come from the fact that we've seen the death of Star Wars through that period of time, the dark times, when there wasn't anything. So, you know, I'm just a total consumer of Star Wars in any kind of way. So I was just really surprised by folks being negative. So I hope that they'll definitely come back to the fold as these movies are made and folks can see what's going on.
I very much agree with that. I think, what's the point? I did say online when so many people were being negative about it, and I says, "Well, you've got to care about it to some degree, to even waste the time to be negative about it, you know." So it's never a lost cause. If people didn't care at all, they just wouldn't talk about it.
Sure,
you know, you get people. I was talking to somebody earlier about Simon Pegg. I like Simon Pegg, but he is a bit up and down in terms of how he relates to Star Wars. You know, loved the originals, hated the prequels, that classic scene in space, you know, turns up in the Clone Wars, great, now right. JJ's making the new Star Wars film, he'll probably turn up in that,
right?
You know, so, but that's his prerogative, he's a Star Wars fan and he's got his right to his opinion, you know, it doesn't make him right, it doesn't make him wrong, right. Same as you or me, you know, it's just how we take it, but the negativity very much surprised me. Now, I'll tell you somebody else who actually mentioned a very similar thing to that, and you may know. Do you remember a website called GalacticEmpire.net?
I do.
Stephen Bramley, yeah. Now, he launched in 1999 the same as we did, and he now does a site called Cinema Geek, but he also posts on Jedi News, which I love the fact that he posts on Jedi News. And he said the same. Why the haters? What's the point? You know, it just seems such a crazy waste of energy. Go and love something else if you're not, rather than sit here and hate this, because we love it. I felt very disappointed, for example, you say about being a consumer of Star Wars and anything Star Wars. I was really disappointed when they cancelled the 3Ds. I was so looking forward to them after seeing the clips at C6 and just looking forward to going to the cinema again to see a Star Wars film, even though it's, you know, I've probably seen Attack of the Clones 30 times, I've probably seen Revenge of the Sith, probably more than that because I love Sith, you know. Don't care. See those on the big screen again in 3D. I was all up for that. And I know there's business reasons, you know, why would Fox want to put their money into a property that's owned by Disney? They're taking all the risk, you know. So I get the logic behind the reason why it was probably cancelled. Nobody actually knows why. That's just my theory. But I feel like we've kind of lost out a little bit there. So I hope they come out on Blu-ray or something or other. They're not lost forever. But
and that was one of the things that a couple of episodes ago on the podcast, I talked about the fact that, you know, they weren't going to be coming out as soon as we found out that was going to happen. And the first thing I told my kids, because I have a daughter who's 10 and I have a son who's 9, and then I have another one who's 8 months. I was telling them that they weren't going to be able to go because we had been hyping it up. We went to the Phantom Menace. It was the first time the kids had ever gone to a Star Wars movie in the theater, and they did it in 3D, and they were just buzzing about it. And so it's so good. They're getting to an age where I can actually share my love of that with them, and they can understand what's going on. And I haven't really tried to push Star Wars on them. I mean, they see me doing things that are Star Wars, but I kind of let them make up their own mind. I don't want them to like Star Wars because I do. And when I told them that they were going to be able to see Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, and they have not yet seen Sith just because of the nature of the movie itself, and so we were going to save that for the 3D version of it to be out in the theater. And they were crushed when they found out. And, of course, I was crushed, too, that the fact that that wasn't going to be something we were going to be able to share. So, but at the same time, I did tell them, well, you know, we may not be able to do this, but, however, there's new things coming out, so we will be able to share those. So it wasn't like that was just it and it wasn't going to be out in the film. But, you know, if you think about it a little bit, and this is almost really hard to fathom, but you know, we have had 6 films in the last 35 years, and now we're going to see at least 5 films over a 6-year period. At least that's what they're saying at this point. How do you fathom the depth of new information that we're going to be seeing?
Wow, that's a very good question, actually, you know, because I thought that, what you've just asked me, I thought that when the Clone Wars started on the television, because we've had 6 years of the movie, 6 movies over, you know, from 77 to, you know, 2005, so it was 28 years. And we, being Star Wars fans, you know, we pore over every frame, we read things into every phrase, you know, no other franchise comes close to that kind of attention that Star Wars gets, which is why JJ and co need to, well, they will, I'm confident, but they need to nail it. They need to take these things into account. But then the Clone Wars comes out and you think, well, all of a sudden we've got like another, you know, 5 or 6 years of another 120 episodes, you know, that's all that new stuff to take on board. And, you know, we've got our EU, but there's no other franchise has got an EU like we've got, you know, and you can't know everything. I mean, I wouldn't even pretend to know a fraction of what's going on in the EU. I've not read most of the EU. So to know that there's... But the movies is really the heart of the core of Star Wars. You know, it's the primary sort of heartbeat of Star Wars. So, yeah, like you say, to know that there's, you know, probably... Well, if it works the way that they'd like it to work, you know, 2015 Episode 7, 17 Episode 8, 19 Episode 9, probably a spin-off movie in between, you know, 7 and 9 somewhere.
Right.
Maybe a TV series, you know, there's people whispering about a TV series as well. Detours has got to come out sometime, if not on telly, then on Blu-ray or DVD. And, you know, so there's all this other stuff. I mean, okay, Detours is different because it's humorous and fun and it's not canon, but, you know, yeah, there's a lot to take in. It's the best word I can think to describe it. It's delicious. I mean, it's so exciting. It's like, well, pour more Star Wars on me, please. Consider me a hot, spicy rib that wants the barbecue sauce of Star Wars.
It sounds like a Def Leppard song.
Make yourself hungry now. You know, so I'm quite happy for them to be absolutely... Because I think that, you know, they're using the Avengers, you know, the Marvel Universe thing as kind of a template, Disney are, rather. And I think that's a very smart thing to do. You kind of consider that the Avengers movie is like a saga episode. And obviously with the Avengers, it's slightly different because Iron Man 3 is essentially the sequel to the Avengers, and Thor the Dark World will be this kind of a sequel to Iron Man, thematically.
Right.
You know, they're all kind of fitting in and around each other. The Star Wars films won't be like that. You know, the Boba Fett film won't be a sequel to Episode 7. You know, and then if they do a Yoda film after Episode 8, it won't be a sequel to Episode 8 because Yoda's not around at the time of Episode 8.
Right.
But in essence, you know, they're kind of quite cute in dropping these in. And if these standalone ones work, once you get past Episode 9, okay, maybe Disney and JJ or whoever takes over from JJ when he's finished doing the trilogy, you know, then they think, oh, let's see what George has got in his little notepad. Let's do 10, 11, and 12. Who knows? You
right.
know, if the template works, don't break it. And if the fans are buying into it, you know, I can't imagine these films not taking $1 billion.
Well,
if The Hobbit can take $1 billion.
If they really do well, and, you know, and we'll talk about J.J. Abrams a little bit later, but if he brings to Star Wars what he brought to the revitalized Star Trek, I think that we're in for a definite ride and a ton of new fans coming into the fold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I'm a massive Star Trek fan. I get a bit of a ribbing for that sometimes, but I'm unabashedly a huge Trek fan, and I always have been. So, and I very much liked what JJ did because he respected. This is why, in a slightly different way, a lot of people get a bit wound up about the whole, will the EU be completely washed away? Who cares if it is? And others are like, no, it shouldn't. I personally think that one of the main strengths of Star Wars, as a fan who consumes Star Wars through many different media sort of formats, you know, a Star Wars comic is as much Star Wars to me as a Star Wars film, as much as it is a book or any other medium. It's all Star Wars. It's just that this Star Wars story they decided would go in a comic, and this Star Wars story they decided was, you know, would be shown to you in this way. It's an episode of the Clone Wars or whatever. but it's one universe that kind of picks up bits from each other and tries its best to fit. Now, Star Trek never had that. Star Trek always said, well, the books are just, they're nothing to do with the films, they're nothing to do with the TV series, they're kind of just spin-offs. And if an author wants to say it's set between this episode and this episode, that's up to him, and if the fans buy it, great, but it's not. We're not going to reference it in a TV show.
Right.
But Star Wars kind of does. You know, they tried their hardest to make it fit. You got a guy like Leland Shee. I put a post on Jedi News today sort of referring to Leland as the master of the holocron, because he, apart from the fact it must be a fascinating job, he does a brilliant job, because he kind of retcons, and having done fan fiction for 30 years, you know, retconning is, you have to do it. You know, when they announced the prequels, I had to go back to a load of stories and rewrite them and rejig them and tweak them so they make sense, and name changes and so on and so forth. So it's just a fact of life that these things will be tweaked. But I think JJ respected what had gone before in Next Generation, Voyager and DS9, because the start of the new Star Trek film is post Next Generation, and then the whole time thing happens and you appear in this era of, you know, Kirk and Spock, and you're kind of watching it again but on an alternate timeline. Yes, I went to the premiere. I was very lucky. I went to the premiere of the last, you know, Star Trek 10, wasn't it? Was it 10? No, 11. should know that. you know, and JJ was there. I've actually got footage on my camera phone of JJ and Zachary Quinto and those guys in the screening that we were in, you know, introducing the film. Fantastic. So if he could, but he's a Star Wars fan at heart, and even when he was doing press for Trek, he would say, oh, I was a Star Wars fan as a kid.
Right.
I wasn't a Star Trek fan, I was a Star Wars fan. You know, and he must have thought, oh, well, that's never going to happen for me. I'm just going to have to look back at those fondly. I can understand why he took the job, and I think, you know, Lucasfilm really wanted him. And I think also because he's so prolific with the TV shows that he launches, you know, more hits than misses. You know, I think, you know, if there's a TV show for Star Wars, I thought the same for Trek. Star Trek needs to be on television more than Star Wars needs to be on television, I think. But I wouldn't surprise me at all if JJ got the live-action Star Wars running with Bad Robot on top of it. So.
Well, and I'm definitely excited the fact that he's going to be directing. And it really wouldn't have mattered who they chose, but being I have seen enough of his work to really be a fan of what he's done, you know, I'm excited about what he's going to be bringing to Episode 7, and I'm definitely interested in what he's bringing to the franchise after seeing what's been done. And like you, you know, I'm very much a consumer of just sci-fi in general, so I like Star Trek. I've watched all the Star Trek episodes, and I've been to all the movies, and I own those Star Trek movies, and I was a big fan of Babylon 5, and, you know, so those type of things, I just enjoy sci-fi in general, and so, you know, it doesn't have to be Star Wars or Star Trek for me, so I'm really looking forward to what he's going to bring to the film. Are there any specific characters or situations you'd like to see as we move forward into the new movies?
Situations, no. What I would like, I think, is because, you know, we just mentioned the EU, for example, and there's a very, you know, tightly defined and well laid out sort of history, a chronology of what's happened post Jedi in the books and comics and so on and so forth. I'd like to think that they will set the new films far enough away from that time period to not have to say, oh, the Yuuzhan Vong invasion never happened, or Chewbacca never died, or whatever it may be. You know, I'd like to think they can step away far enough to not purposefully step on the toes of the EU, because they can not ignore it, or they don't have to ignore it, rather, but they don't have to contradict it. So there is quite an easy way of getting around these things. You know, just because they don't say the Yuuzhan Vong invasion did happen doesn't mean it didn't happen. You know, so unless they overtly say, I mean, I used this example the other day, you know, if they, in regards to Chewbacca, obviously he died in Vector Prime, you know, if they start, the scroll up comes up the screen and they say Han Solo and Chewbacca have never been apart for the last 40 years, you know, then you know that the EU's gone, you might as well just, you know, chuck it. It's just very expensive fan fiction, you know. But if Chewie's in the film, that's fine. Let Leland Chee retcon a reason why Chewie got off the moon before, sure. You know, there's ways around it.
You know, he's definitely going to have his work cut. You know, we're talking about him having the work, and he's gone through retconning all these things, and I'm sure things like the Clone Wars have really kept him busy. But I just can't imagine the retconning he'll have to do with all these additional Star Wars films.
It's a challenge. I think he's definitely up to it. He's definitely up to it. But
if anybody is,
I think he would quite enjoy the challenge of making these things fit. I get a kick out of retconning myself. It doesn't bother me at all.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm definitely not sure how these new stories are going to unfold. So for many years, folks like ourselves, you know, the original Star Wars fans, we were aware of the backstory of Darth Vader. So, yeah. You know, we've had very little information as it might transpire for these new films. So what are your thoughts of things you might predict we might see?
I think, kind of to answer the previous question, because you've probably guessed already, I'll go off on tangents left, right and centre. I'd like to see Luke, Han and Leia in some role. Mainly Luke. I would like to see Luke in some... I think he will have a significant role. I think Han and Leia will have smaller roles. That's just my gut feeling.
Right.
R2 and 3PO are definitely going to be in there. I'd be amazed if they weren't. But beyond that, there's nobody else. I want to see new people. I'd like to see new characters. I was following a thread on probably Twitter last night where somebody was saying that they think, you know, it'll be the descendants of the Skywalkers, and somebody else said, you know, but it doesn't have to be the Skywalkers or the Solos or the Fets. You know, it's a huge galaxy. It can be somebody else's story. But the point that kept coming back was, well, it's a saga movie. The saga is about Luke and Anakin and so on. So I kind of get the logic there. But I would like to see, every new Star Wars film introduces new characters. You know, Lando wasn't in Star Wars. He was in Empire, you know, and we followed him through since then. Incidentally, I'd love to see Lando as well. But I'd like to see new characters. It depends on how far ahead they set it. I think it'll be far enough that if they play it so that Han and Leia have had kids and they have it be Jaina and Jason and those kind of characters, then they'll probably be in their mid... It'll be like the Twilight crowd, right? It'll be their mid-20s, you know, that sort of age. Situations, I want to see new planets, you know. Love going to Tatooine. I mean, for example, without wishing to hype somebody else's podcast, listen to Rebel Force Radio earlier, and Jason made a very good point of when, and it struck a chord with me, when you watch Phantom Menace and they land on Tatooine and it's like, wow, here we're back home, we're on Tatooine again.
Right.
You know, but you're watching them walk into Mos Espa and the whole, like, ignoring the bit where Jar Jar steps in the poodoo, but, you know, all those sequences, it's just like this is so familiar and comfortable as a Star Wars fan. But I kind of don't want to be in my comfort zone, so I don't really want to see Bespin again. I don't want to see Hoth again. I don't want to see Tatooine again. I want to see new planets.
Right.
The only planet I'd really expect to see again would be Coruscant, because it's the capital of the Republic.
Sure.
So that's the only planet I would expect to see. So given that, new worlds, new characters, story terms, wow, I don't know. I mean, I've got a horrible feeling that they're going to want to bring Darth Vader back. I've got a horrible feeling they'll want to bring the Emperor back. I don't think they need to do either.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that, you know, obviously it feels like, and I'm sure just for John Q. public, when we have Star Wars films, they a lot of times associate lightsaber duels and the bad guys and the good guys. And, of course, you know, I don't want to see Darth Vader back, and I don't want to see the Emperor back either. But that doesn't say, especially the way they've played the Clone Wars and how that's tied into these films, the fact that there weren't other Dark Force users out there during the time when the Sith Lords were ruling. So they've definitely shown us in that TV show, anyway, that it's possible to have multiple Sith Lords going on at the same time, even if the other one isn't aware that they're there. So not that I'm saying that they should be a Sith Lord by any means, but that doesn't mean there might not have been a Dark Acolyte or some sort of Dark Force user that, let's say, and they may not do this, but they stumble into Korriban and find the Sith holocron and learn the ways of the Sith, or whatever the case might be. So they might be new Sith as a result of it, or at least new Dark Force users. But maybe there's some sort of bad guy like that that'll come out.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. That makes sense because I think the Jedi Sith element is key to Star Wars, especially the cinematic Star Wars. If you look at the chronology as a whole, and I love, The Essential Atlas is pretty much my favourite non-fiction Star Wars book. I just adore that book, and I'm lucky that Monty, who did some of the maps did all the maps for that book, did a couple of maps for me for the Settling Sector stuff. So I'm very fortunate that, you know, our maps look professional like the original maps. That's an aside, but the point being is that in that book, you know, there's a bit of history in there. You know, there's chronology books come out before Dan Wallace did one, I think, you know, that kind of take you from the very early days of the galaxy right through to where we are now. But in the films, it's always been Rise of the Sith, you know, the Rise of the Empire concurrently and all these different things. Yeah, I agree. I think they'll probably that will be in there somewhere. If it's a new Sith Lord, we've had Sith Lords before.
Right.
You know, Plagueis begot Sidious begot, you know, Vader, whatever, you know, it's that kind of thing. You know, it'll be the next ones, you know, if it's gonna be Han, Luke and Leia's kids, which it probably will, you know, they should be the stars. You know, if there's three new main stars, they always seem to go for three stars, don't they, you know, in the prequels and the sequels. So if you've got three new stars of this new trilogy, they should be the stars of the trilogy. Han, Luke and Leia, you know, Carrie, Harrison, Mark, they will be like the Alec Guinness type character, the Mon Mothma type character, you know, they'll be the supporting stars. Yeah, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if there was a Sith element. It kind of makes sense.
And I don't know how, you know, surely there'll be some sort of bad guy. But, you know, I'm hoping it'll be something that we can kind of latch on to, not some new species that are from outside of the rim that come in, and that's the, you know, the issue. I don't know. It's hard to say.
They did that in Truce of Bakura, didn't they? Like the Sea Rook invasion, and
sure,
Marvel Comics did it with the Nagai, and it, there's no connection.
Right.
You don't know them. You don't care about them. There could be anybody.
So,
you know.
As long as it's good, I don't care.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I think visually it'll look amazing. It'll break all sorts of, you know, technical landmarks. I think the music, if John Williams does it, I'm thrilled to bits. If he hands over the baton to Giacchino, I'm equally as happy because he's a fantastic composer.
Right.
You know, JJ knows how to construct a story. You know, those videos were online not that many weeks ago talking about the mystery box. The mystery box is all well and good, but there's got to be a payoff at the end of it.
Right.
You know, when Lucas wrote Star Wars, you know, he didn't know Luke and Leia were brother and sister when he wrote Star Wars. I don't think he even knew when he wrote Empire. He didn't know for definite that Luke was Anakin's son when he wrote Star Wars. You know, there's a lot of serendipity involved between Star Wars and then Empire and Jedi as two sequels. He didn't have it all mapped out as one, but this one probably will. In fact, it almost certainly will. So JJ can really genuinely lay, like Lucas did with the prequels, lay seeds in this first, you know, episode 7 that will pay off in episode 9. But there's got to be a payoff. It's not a mystery. It's not the trapdoor, where they're called in Lost. It's not that kind of thing. There's got to be some kind of Luke, I am your father payoff that everybody goes, whoa. You know, they tried that with she's my sister sort of thing in Jedi, and it wasn't the same, you know. But it was never that level of, you know.
Well, that felt
more coincidental, more convenient than the Empire scene.
And they definitely didn't have that feeling.
There's got to be something like that, yeah.
They definitely didn't capture that in the prequels either, that moment of Luke, I'm your father. Where, you know, of course, back in 1980 when we first heard that, is like, no, he's just telling him a lie. You know, there's no way he's actually his father. And then, they dropped the bomb in 1983 that says, well, yes, he is. It's like,
I think the difference between the prequels and the sequels is if you looked at the original movies, the original trilogy, you look at the original trilogy and compare that to, say, Lord of the Rings and putting it on film. So the original trilogy is like making Lord of the Rings. It's designed to be action, plot, cliffhanger, reveal, conclusion. You know, that's the way it's built and that's the way it's written. But the prequels, to me, always felt like it was Lucas trying to make a film version of the Silmarillion. You know, this is all the backstory, this is all the cliff notes, this is all the history that leads up to that Lord of the Rings, my Lord of the Rings, and I've got to put it on screen, which is why sometimes the prequels, I love them, I adore them, but they weren't the same film. They were made in a different time with different actors, different techniques, different editing styles, essentially. I think the editing is hugely important. I'd love to see the prequels edited like the original trilogy were. I think they'd be very different films. They'd breathe differently.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's Lucas had these notes all scribbled up and written to support Star Wars Empire and Jedi, and he made them into the prequel trilogy, which is kind of like the Silmarillion was all the little notes that Tolkien had made. It was like the Bible of Middle Earth, wasn't it? So it's like you try making a film out of that. I'm sure Peter Jackson will try in about 10 years' time. But it's a totally different proposition. But the sequels are much fresher, I would imagine, whereas Lucas would have had draft. Well, he has. I'm actually working on something at the moment. You know, he had draft after draft after draft of Star Wars and different drafts of Empire and Jedi, and clearly different drafts of the prequels. he's probably only got a few notes. He's, you know, he said himself, I've got a few notes. I kind of know where this is going, but I don't really know where it ends. And, you know, so you bring in Michael Arndt and you sit down with Kathleen Kennedy, and clearly you've got the brain trust of JJ and the Bad Robot team, you know, and all the other people. I mean, if somebody doesn't sit down and say to Timothy Zahn or Aaron Alston or any of those guys, what do you think? You know, they're mad if they don't use that brain trust. Star Wars has got the most amazing brain trust at its disposal.
So, you know, speaking of the Lord of the Rings, do you think basically because the schedule that they've kind of laid out for how they anticipate these films will be released, do you think they'll do a filming schedule very similar to what they've done on Lord of the Rings with keeping a cast together for multiple shootings?
I don't know. I mean, from what I understand, I think they are just making them one by one by one, but I mean, they're talking about releasing them 2 years apart as opposed to three. Everything's in flux at the moment. I mean, you know, it's not that long ago, like we mentioned earlier, you know, we thought we were getting the 3Ds. We thought, you know, different things would be, we thought the Clone Wars would last longer. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. You know, a lot of things are kind of up in the air at the moment. And I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they went back to a 3 year schedule. Similarly, it wouldn't surprise me if they said, right, episode 7 in 2017, episode 8 in 2019, you know, and did it that way. Filming back to back, I don't know. It would make sense. I mean, you know, that I don't think I've heard whispers, but I don't think they've nailed down their shooting location yet. I'm hoping, obviously, it's going to be back in the UK for the, you know, it was a lucky charm for the original trilogy, and I think Disney wants to kind of hit on that as much as they can. So, and obviously for me living here, it'd be fantastic.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, but I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if they did. If they can get Harrison Ford and they can get his scenes done, you know, if they work out a 3-movie schedule and they're able to film them in that way, then great. If they have young actors, very young actors. You look back at episode 1, for example, and you can literally watch, there's two characters that change ridiculously whilst you're watching that film. One is young Jake Lloyd. They did a pickup scene a year later when he goes into Padme's apartment to thank her and say goodbye. He's about a foot taller than he was when you first see him in Watto's junk shop. You know, it just looks wrong. And Ewan, they got Ewan back to do some reshoots down in the New Forest. And
right.
Ewan was skinny, fit, great shape when he did most of the film. Then they got him back for pickups, and he looked like he'd been on a you know, burger binge for about a year. You know,
maybe a bee stung him.
Yeah, he's like one at Chippendale. You know, the wig didn't look right. He just didn't look right. You know, and the continuity was all over the place. So if they can, I mean, I'm sure technically now they could probably go back and change that if they wanted to, with effects. But nevertheless, you know, there's ways of making it work. So I, honest answer is I don't know. I'd like to think they'll film them separately. I'd like to think they would use different directors as well, but I'm personally 99% sure that they'll just use JJ for all three. But I think one of the strengths of Star Wars Empire and Jedi is that even though they fit together beautifully, Star Wars has got a different aesthetic and a different feel to Empire as it does to Jedi.
Right,
they're very
right.
unique in individual films, whereas I just sometimes think, you know, the prequels, all George, Mr. Star Wars, why wouldn't they be? But with JJ, you know, I think Star Trek Into Darkness will look very much like the original Star Trek, and that's fine in terms of continuity, but there's just something a little bit special, a little bit of extra spice that a different director can give, you know, actors change, pick their game up for different directors. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Now, you know, you had mentioned just a minute ago about Harrison Ford coming in and possibly doing his shoots. What did you think about the rumor the other day about Harrison Ford possibly being all but signed for the movies?
Well, I've heard today that it might well happen, but it won't be confirmed for a long time. And I actually contacted his PR and his agent yesterday, but I've heard nothing back. So I suppose if they say anything, it's a confirmation or a denial is tantamount to saying yes or no, isn't it? So,
right.
So I don't blame them for not saying anything. But I think he'll come back. He seems to have softened to it all. He turned up at the Empire 30th. Charity events, which was quite unexpected. I think he has mellowed. I think, you know, he can be a bit of a grouch when he wants to be, but I do think some of that's a bit of an affectation, and he kind of likes it. You know, he likes to be that kind of guy anyway, so that's just him. you know, whichever way you cut it, you know, he was in, you know, he was in American Graffiti, you know, huge film, you know, one of the biggest ever at the time, you know, then he turns up in Apocalypse Now briefly, and he's in The Conversation briefly, and then he turns up in Star Wars, and that's it, career goes ballistic. So whichever way, you know, he played a character called Sergeant Lucas in Apocalypse Now, so he owes George a lot. You know, I can't see him not coming back if George sits down and says, you know, you basically come in and shoot all your scenes in a day sort of thing, because I don't see him being in the film from start to finish. He's not going to be starring in Star Wars like he starred in Indiana Jones. Not sure that he ever did. Star Wars was never just his film. He was part of an ensemble, but I think he will be in the mix again. And the same for Carrie as well. I think, you know, you'll see her, you know, Jenny Craig to the hilt, you know, coming back.
Do it.
Maybe, yeah, maybe not in the bikini, but certainly, you know, in something familiar, without the buns on the side of the head. But, you know, I think they'll be in much more supporting roles, but I think Mark will be the one that will, I think he kind of will carry the film much more like Alec Guinness did in the original Star Wars.
Right.
I'd like to think he will make it through the through the three films. I know Harrison wanted to bump Han Solo off in Jedi, and Lucas didn't want to do it. They were originally going to kill Lando off. The Falcon wasn't going to make it out of the Death Star, and they changed that. So, you know, they really went for the happy ending with Jedi, when there could have been a bit more of an edge to it. But I'm glad they didn't now, obviously, all these years on, 30 years on. But I think it's fantastic that he's even considering it. But, yeah, I do think he will come back. And when that happens, you know, I think we'll all be talking about it and, you know, posting about it. And I've done quite a bit of stuff on the BBC over here on radio and television about Star Wars, which has been really, really nice. And I'm sure that'll all kick off again. So
what do you think about the rumors of a possible young Han Solo and Boba Fett movie, these spin-offs that they've been talking about?
Well, funny you say that. It's Jeremy Bullock's birthday as we record this, so that's quite cool. I don't know. I think a young Han Solo, you've got to recast. Obviously, you've got to recast. What would worry me is getting a young actor trying to replicate or duplicate that sort of, you know, the cynical Han Solo, gruff, sarcastic. You know, Han was, what, 30 when Star Wars was set, you know, that kind of age.
Right.
You know, and they do a young Han Solo when he's a teenager and he's exactly the same type of character. It's, you know, it doesn't really quite work for me. So, I don't know. I'd be thrilled if they announced it and if they made it and get a good team together, and it'll be as much fun as anything else. I'm a massive fan of the Brian Daley book, so I'd like to think that they would refer to a lot of the little elements in the Brian Daley book and how Han and Chewie met and so on and so forth. So there's certainly a story to be told, and Lucas always held that first meeting back in much the same way that he held back what he did. I mean, I don't know if we really are supposed to believe that Obi-Wan Kenobi's home planet is called Stew John. let's hope not. But, you know, he kind of held that back. And obviously, Yoda's origin, you know, there was that famous Galaxy 2 trading card that showed the Yodas all around the temple that Lucasfilm pulled, because, you know, George wanted to hold that back. So,
well, of course, there are rumors about Yoda as well. So, you know, you've got Boba Fett being tossed around, Han Solo being tossed around, Yoda being tossed around. So
Jabba the Hutt story has been mentioned as well.
Not that I don't think I would be as interested about a backstory on Jabba the Hutt as I would. Now, I wouldn't mind seeing him in conjunction with a Boba Fett movie. You know, kind of how did they kind of get together, and how did he start working for Jabba the Hutt, or those type of things. But for Jabba to have his own standalone movie, I don't know if I would be as interested in something like that.
No, I think you're right. I think you could do, I think somebody said it on another show the other day, you know, you could do like a Godfather type story based around Jabba and all of those bounty hunters, and that's where you can get Simon Pegg in to play Dengar, you know. you know, there's definitely the scope there to do these different things. But in terms of standalone movies, I think there's two that would interest me personally as a fan, apart from doing a film based on all of my fan fiction. Ha-ha. I'd love to see a story of Darth Vader, obviously, between episodes 3 and 4, purely focusing on Anakin.
Right.
And his grief and how he adapts to his new situation. You know, he's gone from being a slave as a child to being kind of in servitude to the Jedi, to becoming a paraplegic slave to the Emperor, you know. So he's gone through the worst possible route through life, But by the time he gets to Star Wars, he's singularly focused on serving the Emperor in whatever capacity he's required of him. You know, he's the henchman in Star Wars. In Empire, the doubt comes in because he wants Luke to join him. And, you know, he's got his own journey. So I think there's stories to be told linking the gaps there. And I'd like to think, again, that they would pick up on a lot of the elements that are in, you know, the Rise of Darth Vader novel, Darth Vader and the Ghost Prison, you know, all the comics that Dark Horse are doing. There's some great sort of background material that they could, if they wanted to, interlace into there. And also, Ewan McGregor has kind of said that he'd be interested in coming back as Obi-Wan. So
yeah, that'd be awesome.
A story of Obi-Wan. It'd be fantastic. Yeah, you know, Obi-Wan in the desert. You know, they've got Sideshow, have got that fantastic maquette, that fantastic model coming out that looks a bit like Ewan and a bit like Sir Alec. It's a fantastic piece.
Oh, I know.
You know, it's there to be done. John Jackson Miller's got the Kenobi novel coming out this year, so there's stories to be told. You know, I don't think he just sat in that hut and communed with the Force for 20 years. You know, I wouldn't at all surprise me if he was off planet doing things. People were coming to him. You know, the Jedi Purge was going out. Who's to say people didn't try and find him and never got away? There's different stories you could certainly tell. They're the two I think would be the most interesting. And also they would both kind of feed in quite nicely to A New Hope as well. So.
Well, you know, there's so much fertile ground with just so many different things that they've got available for Star Wars. I mean, there's just an endless supply of things that could be done. And, of course, things that even haven't been, you know, done throughout the expanded universe as far as ideas and all. I'm sure with all the writers who will want to jump into these types of things that we're just going to have an unlimited availability of different types of stories that will be available. You know, with the success of the Clone Wars and the live-action series just waiting and itching to be made, what do you think is the future for Star Wars on TV?
I think the Clone Wars is just... I mean, I've not seen the latest episode yet.
Oh, it was good. It was really good.
Is it good?
It was very good.
Oh, right, okay. I'll watch that tomorrow then. I just think that's... I mean, visually, it's just... a treat every week. The voice cast have just they were always good. Let's not pretend that they weren't always good, but they've just so matured and seasoned into their roles that it's, you don't even think. There's moments watching Lawless and, you know, some of those recent episodes where you don't even consider that you're watching a movie, and it's proper main event, out of your seat Star Wars. You know, it's as pure Star Wars as anything we've seen before. So I'd like to think that will last. I think it will last another year. I think you'll get a season 6, but I think that will probably be it. I think Disney are probably ready to move on to other things. I think Dave Filoni is a big enough character and tenured enough at Lucasfilm to probably step onto another project. Star Wars, if he wants something original, if that's what he chooses. The voice cast are all, they're fine. You know, everybody's good. It's not like anybody's, you know, livelihood's at risk if the Clone Wars finishes. But I do think they will go live action pretty soon. You know, I wouldn't surprise me at all if we were looking at a live action show on ABC within the next couple of years. I think it very much depends on how S.H.I.E.L.D., the new S.H.I.E.L.D. series takes off that Joss Whedon's just finished directing the premiere episode of that, the pilot. I mean, that's not going to series yet. It is still just a pilot, but I'd be amazed if that never took off. And I think Star Wars will go the same way. When it's set, I don't know. The word was when Rick McCullum was still at Lucasfilm was that it would be set between episodes 3 and 4. It would tell about, you know, the dark times and all that sort of stuff in that kind of Deadwood-styled Sopranos vibe. Disney don't really go in for that kind of thing, I don't think. So I think you will have a live-action Star Wars series, but I don't think it will be set in that era. It will be, you know, either the classic era.
That
yeah,
2013
the
thing
era.
Might not, you know, because I really think that 2013 or 13-13, excuse me.
Yeah.
We're living
yeah.
in 2013, but 13-13, I think was very much supposed to be in conjunction with that TV show. I think we were supposed to see a lot of that. And actually, you know, not to spoil any episodes or anything, but I think the episode today of Clone Wars was there's so many homages to things in that particular episode today. And 13-13 had that feel to it, and when you see it, you'll see it that there were points where you felt like you were back in the original trilogy. There were points where you felt like you were in Revenge of the Sith. I mean, there was just so many touch points within that particular episode that it felt so much like those things. But I think you're right. With Disney, I don't think that they're going to really go the dark route. Not to say that it may not get made. I don't know for sure. But, you know, I would really like to see an X-Wing series of shows. And, you know, I've always been a huge fan of the X-Wing video games. I actually bought my first computer as a result of the very first X-Wing game for the DOS game back in, that was 1993, I think it was. So, and of course, I've got the X-Wing books, and I don't read as much as I should, but I love the whole fact of those types of shows. So I'm thinking that they could even do a style of a show, like, I don't know if you're familiar with the TV show Baba Black Sheep. It was a TV series that ran from 1976 to 1978 in the United States.
Oh, I don't know that one, no.
And the premise of that one was based on the experiences of a United States Marine Corps aviator. His name was Pappy Boyington, and he was in a World War II squadron in the Pacific called the Black Sheep Squadron.
Yeah.
So it was the whole, you know, you learn about the pilots, you follow them along, there's basically red alerts, and they're out on missions, and they're, you know, lots of dogfighting and those type of things. So I would definitely love to see that type of element. You know, you're following a squadron, say Rogue Squadron, along through their skirmishes. And, you know, we hear in the Star Wars backstory, basically, you know, they just won their first Rebel victory, and, you know, they're certainly hitting different targets, and they're moving forward, back and forth, trying to hit and run. So I'd love to see something like that on TV. Is there anything specific you'd like to see come to TV that maybe they haven't talked about before?
Two things. One, exactly what you've just said. Somebody said the other day, you know, they should make an X-Wing movie, and straight away I thought, no, that's just a TV series begging to be made.
Yeah.
So I 100% agree with that. But also, I think, the underworld... you know, obviously, at its core is dark, and I'm kind of more in tune with that side of it because of the fiction that I write. My main character was a smuggler, so my stories are all, you know, smugglers, gangsters, ganglords, that kind of thing, so in our own little area of the galaxy. But so I would like to see that personally, because then I think you really do have the scope to, if you want to do a Boba Fett story, if you want to do a Jabba the Hutt story, if it's set far enough back, you can do a Han Solo story. You know, if it's set far enough forward, okay, it won't be Jabba, it'll be somebody else. But, you know, you can kind of bring in all these other elements. And wherever you pitch a series, it's always in the Star Wars universe. So, you know, I'd like to think, I mean, Rick McCullum said, you know, if they'd have gone down the route with this live action show that they were talking about, you wouldn't have followed the Jedi. The Jedi would have been up there, sort of the untouchable people, you know, like we follow, you know, always useless pop stars that seem to be doing stuff on, you know, in the news all the time. You know, they're people that you're never going to get to meet and interact with yourself, but that you're aware of them. You know, and I would imagine in the Star Wars universe, the galaxy is largely aware of, for example, what was going on in the Clone Wars. They'd know much more about their local area, their local planet, maybe their system, possibly their sector, but they probably wouldn't know what was happening all around the galaxy. But if you did a TV series in the right way, then you could kind of, not an anthology series, but you could kind of touch on all these different elements and feel like you were up to date with what was going on. So an X-Wing series and an Underworld series, they're the two I would like to look at.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. And I definitely agree with you on the X-Wing series group. I think there are probably a lot of people who would be chomping at the bit to see something like that. And, of course, that's just my personal opinion, but, yeah, I would definitely agree with you on that. You know, I really appreciate the time that you've taken with us the last two episodes to spend time talking about not only how you got started with Star Wars and lightsaber and Jedi news, and then kind of as we move forward talking about the feature films that we're going to see and the future of the Star Wars television. But before I let you go, as a fan, do you have any closing thoughts about the future of Star Wars? What do you think?
I think the future of Star Wars, I mean, since... Where are we now? 2013. So I'd say since about 1990-91, obviously when Timothy Zahn launched Heir to the Empire, Dark Empire came out from Dark Horse, it's been a steady rise and a steady build. I think it kind of reached a peak in 96 with Shadows of the Empire and then the special editions, and it's just been a very steady, constant bubble. And even after Revenge of the Sith, you know, it wasn't that long until the Clone Wars, and fandom was still hyped up and happy and pleased. So we've been very lucky as Star Wars fans that it's been very consistently ticking along for the last 20 years. Where I sit now, and probably where you sit as well, Gary, it feels like we're on the verge of something really big is about to go bang. You know, it feels like we're going to get some amazing television. We're going to get some awesome films. we're probably going to get, Disney are going to start turning sites around the world at different Disney parks into Star Wars themed things. It just, you know, it's always been part of the zeitgeist. It's always been part of popular culture. It just feels like it's about to bubble over now, big time. So I think as a Star Wars fan, and with both of us doing, you know, good work, I'd like to think, on our respective websites and so on, it feels like the best days are ahead of us. And I mean, I'm 42 next month, and I've been into this since I was seven. So
just,
it's like
a baby.
It feels like the same as you. Exactly. You know, it feels like it's a life changing thing to be in Star Wars. But it isn't, because it's always been there. But, you know, it feels like it's about to really kick off big time and just go bananas. And I'm really genuinely excited about it. I couldn't be happy. I've loved being on the show, and I'm happy to talk to you anytime. It's fantastic. I'll talk Star Wars all day till the cows come home. But it just feels really like an exciting time to be a Star Wars fan and involved like we are. So, yeah, good times, very good times are ahead, I think.
And, you know, it's the first time, I think, that I can ever remember in my life that I can actually see Star Wars going past the point of my life. That's actually kind of an odd feeling, is that, you know, Star Wars will continue, my kids will enjoy it, my grandkids, if I have any, will enjoy it. But I think for the first time there will be new Star Wars being released that I will actually not see as a result of me not being here to witness it. And I hope that, not that I don't want Star Wars to continue on, but I would love to say I've seen it all.
That's so. A fascinating thought. I've never thought that, but, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, I think, we've got at least another decade, at least, worst case scenario, I think we've got a decade of constant stuff. And if it's even vaguely successful, you can double that. So I think, yeah, I agree. I think wherever they take it, I think, yeah, we're going to, you know, when they put us in the box, you know, I think that, we'll probably go thinking, well, we've had that companion with us for pretty much all of the journey. So I've never thought of that. That's a fascinating way of, a fascinating thought, yeah.
I wasn't trying to be morbid, but...
No.
But you know, it's the first, I'm first time I'd ever
I'd
thought about
happy.
That.
It's the last thing I watch, Star Wars. I'll be quite happy.
Well, it's been an absolute honor to have you on as the first guest for the Galactic Escape Pod for the last couple of episodes. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I've known you for so long, and it's always great to sit down and get the opportunity to talk with you. And so it's just been fantastic. So thank you all for joining us today.
No, pleasure's all mine. I've really enjoyed it.
Tell folks how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at JediNews2010, also on Skype at the same address. If anybody needs to drop me an email, a beautiful friendly, it's mark@JediNews.co.uk. We're on Facebook at Jedi News, and Jedi News, the website, Jedi News, JediNews.co.uk. And buy The Insider. If you're not subscribing to The Insider, why aren't you subscribing to The Insider? Everybody should get The Insider.
Yeah, if you're not doing it, this is a must, especially at this point. You've
absolutely
got to get it now.
There's some brilliant stuff to come, I can promise you that.
Coming from The Insider himself, he can guarantee, I'm sure there's something down the line that you might want to see in those articles. Well, thank you so much again for joining us, Mark, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you again in the future.
Anytime. Thanks again, Gary.
Best of luck to you.
Cheers.
Thanks. So today we continue with part 5 of the story of Star Wars. When we concluded part 4, Alderaan had been destroyed by the Zest Star, and the Imperial scouts had reported back that there was not a current rebel base on Dantooine. So Tarkin then ordered Princess Leia's death.
Meanwhile, the Millennium Falcon comes out of hyperspace near the coordinates where Alderaan once existed. But Solo and the others are in for a shock.
Stand by, Chewie. Here we go. Cutting the sublight engines.
What the? We come out of hyperspace into a meteor shower. Some kind of asteroid collision. Not on any of the charts.
What's going on?
Our position's correct, except no Alderaan.
What do you mean? Where is it?
So I'm trying to tell you, kid. It ain't there. It's been totally blown away.
What? Ow!
Destroyed by the Empire.
The entire Starfleet couldn't destroy the whole planet. It'd take 1,000 ships with more firepower than I've...
There's another ship coming in.
Look at him, he's heading for that small moon.
I think I can get him before he gets there. He's almost in range.
That's no moon.
It's a space station.
Why are we still moving towards it?
We're caught in a tractor beam that's pulling us in.
But there's gotta be something you can do.
There's nothing I can do about it, kid. I'm full power. I'm gonna have to shut down. They're not gonna get me without a fight.
You can't win, but there are alternatives to fighting.
As the helpless pirate ship is pulled steadily toward the evil metal moon, Solo and his passengers hide in cleverly concealed smuggling compartments. The immense size of the battle station is staggering, and the mile-high docking port doors yawn slowly open.
Clear Bay 327. We're opening the magnetic field.
We've captured a freighter entering the remains of the Alderaan system. Its markings match those of a ship that blasted its way out of Mos Eisley.
They must be trying to return the stolen plans to the princess. She may yet be of some use to us.
Unlock 1, 5, 7, and 9 release chocks. 316, report to control.
There's no one on board, sir. According to the log, the crew abandoned ship right after takeoff.
Send a scanning crew aboard. I want every part of this ship checked.
Yes, sir.
I sense something. Presence I've not felt since.
Solo and his passengers cautiously emerge from the Millennium Falcon. They quickly overcome two troopers standing guard and steal their uniforms. Luke and Han Solo enter the corridor dressed as Imperial stormtroopers. The robots lead them to one of the battle station's systems control terminals.
We found the computer outlet, sir.
Plug in. He should be able to interpret the entire Imperial network.
He says he's found the main controls to the power beam that's holding the ship here. A power loss at one of the terminals will allow the ship to leave.
I don't think your boys can help. I must go alone. Your destiny lies along a different path from mine. The Force will be with you. Always.
As Ben leaves, R2 discovers a staggering piece of information. Princess Leia is being held in the Death Star's detention block. And 3PO's interpretation ends on a chilling note.
I'm afraid she's scheduled to be terminated.
Oh, no.
Better her than me.
She's rich.
Rich?
Rich, powerful. Listen, if you were to rescue her, the reward would be...
What?
Well, more wealth than you can imagine.
I don't know. I can imagine quite a bit.
You'll get it. I better.
Still in trooper's uniforms, Luke and Han move to the detention center, with Chewbacca posing as a prisoner. Once inside, they overpower the guard and begin their search for the princess.
We gotta find out which cell this princess of yours is in. Here it is, 2187. You go and get her. I'll hold him here.
The guard's communicator beeps, and Han must answer the call.
Everything's under control. Situation normal.
Who is this? What's your operating number?
Han answers the question with a blast from his laser pistol.
Boring conversation anyway.
Luke, we're gonna have company!
But Luke ignores the warning and continues to Leia's cell. There, the sleeping princess stirs and faces Luke.
Aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper?
Huh? Oh, the uniform.
I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm here to rescue you.
You're who?
I'm here to rescue you. I've got your R2 unit. I'm here with Ben Kenobi.
Ben Kenobi? Where is he?
Come on.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Be sure to join us again next episode as we continue with part 6 of the story of Star Wars. It's also been a pretty interesting week as we've had more folks that have come online and said that they were interested in being in either Star Wars Episode 7 or in one of the spin-off films. So we can add Ian McDiarmid to the list and Mark Hamill to the list. And again, J.J. Abrams will be saying that it'll be a little while before we can get some information from him. We had a great episode again with Episode 19, To Catch a Jedi, for the Star Wars The Clone Wars in Season 5. And we'd like to give real special thanks to Mark Newbold as he spent time with us in both the last podcast and this podcast. And as we've gotten to know more, not only about Mark, but also about Episode 7, and we had a good discussion about his thoughts on the movie and how we might proceed moving forward into the future with the Golden Age of Star Wars. So be sure to come on over to Galactic Voyage for all the latest news and information, great ships, Episode 7 news, the Clone Wars information, and we'll keep you all up to date there. If you'd like to contact us, send in questions or thoughts or episode information for each show, you can contact us at podcast@galactic-voyage.com. We can also be found on Twitter at Galactic Voyage, so please join us there and continue with some great conversations. Again, I'm your host, Gary Willis. We're again so glad to have you with us today. Please join us again next time for more galactic news on the Galactic Escape Pod. So may the Force be with you, and always remember that
you've taken your first step into a larger world.
Thank you for joining us on the Galactic Escape Pod, the official podcast of galactic-voyage.com. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and is not endorsed in any way by Lucasfilm Limited. Star Wars, all sounds, characters, and music are the property of Lucasfilm Limited, all rights reserved. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of galactic-voyage.com.